I'm not an old man, but the boy out in my driveway says that I am. I'm not an old man. I'm the old man, his old man. This title does not, as far as I'm concerned, carry much respect, and I'm realizing here, in my comfortable chair, on this balmy summer evening, in the blue glow of my 32-inch television set, hearing the clicks of crickets in the bushes below the window that surround my house, my home, that I don't hold much respect for the boy with the quavering voice in my gravel drive. He's my boy, and I cannot see him through the window. The drive is on the north side of the house, and the window looks out on the east, the yard, the street with the telephone lines overhead, where the squirrels dance like brown bushy waves over the wires, and I can never help but laugh when I see those buggers. But his voice quavers. It is a desperate sound, a sound I've heard many times from him. A whining, confounded, leaky balloon hiss leaving his mouth and traveling aimlessly until the wind catches it and sends it to my ears via the window. It's a sound that I've heard from him many times, though not in a very long time. Not since he was small and licking at his mother's ankles, clinging to her pants leg. But he's no longer a little boy. He's close to being a man. I realize this only on occasions like now, when I'm surprised and embarrassed to hear this child's weeping from my son, who's now taller than me and who shaves too, but still cannot run down to the store and get us six packs. But I still to his face call him kid and boy. Even I'm realizing in my own head alone, sitting here at the television by myself. The lack of respect is mutual then. The old man and the kid. I'm getting embarrassed enough by the quavering and whining that I shift in my seat a bit. Not really squirm, but more like sort of wince. But I'm alone and I don't get too dramatic about it like he might. I turn the television volume up a notch or two with the clicker, but keep it low enough to hear just barely what he might say out there in my gravel drive. What's happening in the drive is none of my business, and I don't really want to hear the boy's sounds anymore, but it's my house. It's that girlfriend of his. About a half hour before, they'd been talking on the phone, my boy in the other room, and I'd begun to overhear the stress rising in the boy's voice even then, like in a young lover's spat. Then he hung up after some time and went directly outside, and I'd thought he left without announcing it to me where he intended to go at this time after dark. But then I heard this car pull into my drive, and in a few moments realized it's the girlfriend, and I can just now begin to hear them talking. And though I could not, and still cannot see them from my window, I know they are standing side by side, leaning on the quarter panel of her tan car. That's the image, at least, because that's the way I often see them standing out in my drive when I'm pushing the lawnmower back into the utility shed after mowing my half of the yard. His half still unmowed, and will wait until the next day when he gets home from his job. It's about, and to, his girlfriend out there that his voice quavers. She's cute enough in her own right, this girlfriend of his. She's short, brown-haired, maybe a bit chunky, but a polite girl. My boy has different tastes in women than I do, though I'm not really sure what my taste is now. It's been so long since I've been on a date. Sometimes these things change on us. Then I might just be surprised. When his mother left those years ago, when he was just really small, but old enough to remember her leaving, I couldn't bring myself to start dating again. Felt too old for a younger single man's business. Plus, also, I suppose, since the leaving, was not something I'd wanted. But then urges get the best of us, and I remembered real quick how to ride that bike. Though at this point in the scheme of things, what with my age being pretty well past the 20s, I heard from these women lots of rhapsodizing and soliloquizing about the escape of fleet-footed youth and the tickings of biological clocks, and couldn't believe that I'd gotten that old that fast. One look at the boy, though, and it was something I couldn't deny. He was at the time 7 or 8. I didn't want anything serious or some other mother for the boy, so the number of women was plenty, but the number of actual dates few. Those leavings, I didn't really mind. I can hear the shifting of gravel a bit, and the quaver in his voice gets a bit louder and more stressed, slipping easily into that place between a whine and crying, and I realize suddenly, oh Lord, he cannot be about to cry. Not in front of the girlfriend, and definitely not out there in the open for any and all neighbors and passers-by to see and hear. I only ever cried once that I remember in any clear way. I did not cry at my father's funeral when I was 10. I did not cry when I was shot in the shoulder in Nam. But I did cry when the boy's mother left. I cried alone in the kitchen that night, with just a light over the sink on. But then the boy walked in his pajamas and caught me crying, and that made me begin to cry harder. He came right up to me at the fake oak leaf table, my face down, hands covering my eyes, my shoulders doing that crying shoulder shake that you always see, and he put those thin little arms on my shoulders and patted me and whispered, "Dad, it'll be okay. It'll be all right." And he just kept patting my shoulders. I turned to him, and my throat was full of bubbles of spit and my nose running snot, and I managed to say, "I feel like you should be the dad, and I should be the son." And then he sent himself off to bed to leave me be in the dim kitchen to finish crying. The girlfriend is breaking it off with him. I can hear it in little pieces. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure it out. What with personal experience and just a general knowledge acquired from having been able to live to a certain age, the boy never did date at all that I knew in high school, and though I wasn't really worried about the prospect of him being queer, it was a confirming relief when this girlfriend started coming around. The boy is now 2 years out of high school, still living in this house with me. We did not have the savings to send him to the university after he graduated, and he hadn't produced the grades for scholarships or grants, so he put in a semester at the community college, and then just didn't register again, saying that he'd realized he wasn't ready for more school just yet, and opted to work instead. But this girlfriend of his is in high school, has just completed what I believe and deeply hope to be her senior year. She will go to college a state away, he's told me. It's all been planned and mapped out. Has been for as long as they've been together, which is just now around a year. She's his first steady girlfriend, and I'm sure by the way he scurried after her that he feels for her what he believes at this point in his short life to be love. I know that they have been intimate, in my house, in his room. I'm not a stupid man, and they are not as clever as they probably think. But now I realize it has never dawned on me in the past that he might get her pregnant. I never even met her parents. I don't even remember if I've been told her last name. All of this is his problem, and none of my business. He is crying now, I can hear, pleading with her. Another heavy crunch of gravel tells me he is down now, probably down on his knees in front of her, clinging to her hands or maybe her shirt or the waist of her jeans like he did his mother when he was young. She's breaking it off, and he doesn't want to break it off with her, and it's pretty loud now and just too embarrassing. So I turn up the television again, but only just another notch, and I can hear his quavering words even clearer on a new bluster of wind through the window. And he's making promises now, crazy, stupid promises that if she would just stay, he would change and do this right and that different, and they would be happy. And now he's done it. That's it. He's asked for her hand in marriage. I can't stand it anymore and click the television off, get out of my chair, and head through my house toward the bathroom. I go through my dining room where the round, fake oak leaf table now rests. None of the extra leaves in, though. I go through my kitchen with the loud humming fridge and the dishwasher that I never use because it has a leak. We've never really had the dishes to fill it up anyway. I go into my bathroom and close the door. All I hear are the streaming sounds of me urinating in the toilet. I brush my teeth and floss in the quiet of the bathroom. When I take off my t-shirt and jeans, I barely hear the engine of the girlfriend's car turning over and the tires pulling out of the gravel driveway. The bathroom window does not look out on the drive. It faces south, to the neighbor's backyard. The window right now is just a black rectangle with blacker trees and a lighter outline of a house. I leave my bathroom and go out into my dark bedroom and turn down the covers. There's not much respect between this old man and that kid, but as I get into bed, I try real hard not to be too embarrassed or mad or disappointed with my son anymore. He will spend some time working it all out in the gravel drive alone. My father died when I was 10, and I never did have a father figure growing up after that. And I realized some time ago that I tend to overcompensate, to exaggerate, to overexhibit what I believe fatherhood and general masculinity to be. That comes from my having no father. And like that, my son had no mother while he was growing up, but was old enough to remember her leaving. So annoying and embarrassing as it is, I realize as I try but fail to get settled in my bed, that my son is just doing the same as I do, only mother-wise and not father-wise like me. We're an awful lot alike, this old man and that kid. Maybe that's it. I wonder if he realizes it too, or ever will.
Boy in the Drive was written and produced for Museoncast by Ann Pendleton.